Hester, Ava, Layla. Layla. Shit. He got out and headed down the corridor. He stopped in front of the door with the brass sign reading Presidential Suite in fancy script. He looked at his keycard. He looked at the door. Sandra was beautiful. You could criticize this type of relationship, or label it, or consider it empty, or whatever other judgment card you feel like pulling out. But it was all a matter of perspective. He and Sandra could link up and have something special. Just because it didn't last did not make it less so. Cliché, sure, but everything dies. A beautiful rose lives but a short time. Certain termites can survive for 60 years. A Bon Jovi song came to mind. Man, first Bruce, now John. How New Jersey could he be? Want to make a memory? Wilde took one more look at the door, thought of Sandra, and that long red hair fanned across his chest. Then he shook his head. Not tonight. He would head back down to the lobby, call her from the house phone. He didn't want her waiting up for him. That was when the door opened. How long have you been standing here? Sandra asked. A minute
or two.
Want to talk about it?
Probably shouldn't.
Talk?
I'm not much of a talker.
But I'm a super good listener, Sandra said. He nodded. Yeah, that's true. She took a step back. Come on in, Wilde. And he obeyed.
Chapter 22. When Wilde woke up, the first thing he thought about, even before he realized that he was in a strange yet familiar hotel room rather than his eco-capsule, was Layla. Damn. Sandra sat in a chair with her feet tucked under. She looked out the window, her face lit by the morning sun. For a few long moments, neither of them moved. She stared out the window. He stared at the profile of her face. He tried to read her expression, serenity, regret, contemplation, and he realized that whatever he deduced would probably be wrong. Human beings were never that simple to read.
Good morning, Sandra.
She turned to him and smiled. Good morning, Wilde. Then, do you have to leave right away? Again, despite the warning he had just given himself on human beings, he tried to read her. Did she want him to leave, or was she giving him an out if he wanted to take it?
I have no plans, he said, but if you do,
how about we order some breakfast?
That sounds great.
Sandra smiled at him. I bet you know the breakfast menu by heart.
He didn't reply.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean...
Wilde shook it off.
She asked him what he wanted to eat. He told her. She stepped into the suite's living room and picked up the phone.
Wilde got out of bed naked. He was padding toward the bathroom when his phone erupted. Not buzzed or rang or vibrated. Erupted.
He quickly snatched it up and stopped the alarm. Everything okay? He looked at the screen. The answer was no. He swiped left, which some might find ironic under the circumstances. It wasn't Tinder. It was his security system. A car had pulled into his hidden road. No big deal. The alarm doesn't sound for that. It just triggers the other motion detectors. Two of them had gone off. As he watched the screen, a third lit up. That meant people, at least three, were walking in the woods in search of his home. He swiped left again. A map came up. A fourth alarm triggered. They were traveling from the south, east, and west toward the eco-capsule.
You have to go, Sandra said.
Wilde wanted to explain. Someone is trying to find where I live.
Okay.
I mean, this isn't some bullshit excuse.
I know, she said.
How long are you staying in town?
I'm leaving today.
Oh.
Oh, or whew.
She held up her hand. Sorry, that was uncalled for. I know you won't believe this, but this is new to me.
I believe it, he said.
It's not new to you, though.
No, it's not.
You didn't sleep well, she said. You called out a lot. You rolled around like the blankets were binding you.
I'm sorry if I kept you awake.
There was really nothing more to say. Wilde got dressed quickly. There was no kiss goodbye. There was no true goodbye.
He preferred it that way. Sandra stayed in the suite's other room while he got ready, so maybe she did too. There was no time to travel on foot, so Wilde grabbed a taxi parked outside the Sheridan. He didn't give the driver an address because he really didn't have one. He had him drive up Mountain Road. Wilde rarely traveled on this stretch of highway, too many bad memories. When the driver took the curve, the same curve David's car had taken so many years ago, Wilde felt his hand grip the seat. He eased his breathing. The small white cross was still there, something Hester probably would have found unnerving, if not ironic. Wilde had no idea who had put it there all those years ago. He'd been tempted to remove it. It had been there too long. But who was he to intervene?
"There are no houses up here," the driver told him.
"I know. Just pull over when I tell you."
"You going for a hike?"
"Something like that, yeah." Half a mile later, he gave the driver the signal. He handed the man a 20 for an $8 fare and got out near the mountain's peak. His small hidden road, the access point for his visitors, was closer to the mountain's base. He normally climbed up the hill toward his home. Today he'd climbed down, checking the security map on his phone as he did. From what he could make out from the motion detectors, his visitors were approaching the capsule slowly and carefully, and from all sides, with almost military precision. Disturbing. Why were they coming for him? And equally, if not more important, who was coming for him? One might think it a stroke of luck that Wilde happened to be out the night of this invasion, but that wasn't the case. If he'd been home, the alarms would have roused him. He would have taken off before they got within 500 yards of the eco-capsule. He'd long ago set up escape routes and hiding places just in case anyone ever tried to get to him. He could be gone in no time. No one knew these woods like he did. In here, in this thicket, they would have no chance against him. It didn't matter how many of them there were. But the questions remained. Who were they? And what did they want? Wilde eased down the mountainside, letting gravity make the journey easier. He veered to his right by a forked tree, toward the closest triggered motion detector. Being in the woods, amongst animals and wildlife, the motion detector could be accidentally set off quite easily. A deer goes by, a bear, even squirrels or raccoons sometimes. But Wilde had a system, one alarm dominoing to the next before any warnings were issued, proving the movements had to be somewhat calculated, and thus most likely human. Between the car parked on his road, Ding 1, and the follow-up triggers, he knew that this was no false alarm. It wasn't one man or even two or three. More likely, there were five or more coming for him. It was 8 a.m. The woods were cool, that early crisp still in the air. Wilde moved with panther-like quiet. He didn't really have a plan here. It was mostly reconnaissance. Keep your distance. Learn about your adversary. Check out their positions and numbers. Try to figure out what the hell they want with him. He slowed when he reached the rock formation with a trigger motion detector. He checked the device just to see if there was some kind of malfunction that might explain why so many had gone off. The detector was intact. He picked up the pace now. And there they were. Two men together working in tandem. Smart. One he could pick off, take out before he communicated with the others, but two would be much more difficult. They were dressed head to toe in black. They had their heads on a swivel, one taking the lead and looking forward, the other pulling up the rear. They stood far enough apart so again they couldn't be taken down by one assailant. Professionals. Wilde moved in for a closer look. They both wore earpieces, probably communicating with the others. These guys were coming in from the north. There were teams coming in from the south, east, and west, too. Assuming two men on a team, that meant a minimum of eight opponents. Wilde was good at tracking, obviously better than any of these guys, but that didn't make him invisible. Overconfidence leads to mistakes. The men were armed. Their eyes constantly swept the landscape, and realistically, if Wilde wasn't careful, there was a decent chance he could be spotted. Every once in a while, the taller man checked something on his smartphone screen and changed their direction slightly. Whatever app they were using, it was clearly leading them to the eco-capsule. Wild had no idea what the technology was, but then again, if someone wanted to find his home badly enough, there were tracking devices that would eventually lead them to it. He'd always known that. He'd prepared for it. Knowing the men's ultimate destination made it easier. Wild didn't have to follow closely. He veered off toward one of his safe boxes. He had six of them in the woods, all hidden in spots no one would find, all opened by using his palm print rather than a combination lock. This one was up in a tree. He climbed, found it taped under the large branch, opened the box. Wild took out the gun. He was about to close it up without taking out the false identity papers, but then he thought better of it. Suppose he had to run. Better safe than sorry. He slid back down the tree and made his way toward the eco-capsule. He moved quickly now, wanting to arrive before the tentatively moving team he'd been following got there. And then what? He'd figure that out when the time came. He hurried ahead, moving with ease. He located the hill approximately 200 yards from where the eco-capsule sat. He climbed a tree so that he would be high enough to look down on the clearing. He wanted to put the capsule in a denser part of the forest, but that blocked the sun, which made storing solar energy that much more difficult. Still, it would pay off now. Once he reached the top of the tree, he'd be able to see the men approaching from a safe spot. Wild grabbed a branch, pulled himself up, and looked down. Damn. They were already there. Four men surrounding the capsule, armed. Two more, the two Wild had been following, came into a clearing. So now it was six men. The leader approached the capsule cautiously. Wild recognized him. Wild scrolled through his phone's call history and hit the return call button. Gavin Chambers was reaching for the eco-capsule's door when he must have felt the vibration in his pocket. He took out his phone, looked at it, glanced at his surroundings. He hit the answer button and put the phone to his ear. Wild, don't touch my house. Gavin took a harder look around now, but there was no way he'd be able to spot Wild up in the tree. Are you inside this thing?
No.
I need you to open it.
Why?
Something has happened. Something big.
Yeah, I figured that.
How?
Are you joking? You have at least four armed teams circling my place in the woods? You don't have to be a trained detective to figure out something big has happened.
So what is it?
The Maynards.
What about them? I need to look inside your home. Then I need to take you to them. Are you nearby, or are you watching me on some kind of camera I missed?
He looked up again, shading his eyes.
Either way, I'm not going to find you, am I?
Nope.
I'm trespassing on your turf.
Yet here you are.
Had to do it, Wild. Had to flush you out one way or the other.
So now what?
I could take an axe to your house and see what's inside.
Not your style, Wild said.
No, it's not. Tell you what. I'll send my men away.
Sounds like a good start.
But then I'll need to see you.
Wild didn't reply.
Gavin Chambers barked out some orders. The men complied without complaint. When they were gone, Gavin Chambers put the phone back to his ear. Come out now. We need to talk.
Why?
What's wrong? Another kid is missing.
Chapter 23 Hester still had the stomach flutters when she woke up. The flutters had started last night at 11 p.m. when Orin had walked her to her door. He wouldn't just leave her at the curb or even in that elevator, too much a gentleman, and kissed her. Or did she kiss him? Didn't matter. It was a kiss. A real kiss. He wrapped one arm around her waist.
Okay, yes, that was nice.
But with the other hand, his big hand, with the other big, wonderful hand, he cupped the back of her head and tilted her face up and, in one word, swoon. Hester melted, right there. Hester Crimstein, attorney at law, knew that she was too old to melt or swoon or feel the same stomach flutters she felt when she was 13 years old, and Michael Gendler, the handsomest boy in her class, sneaked away with her at Jack Kolker's bar mitzvah,
and they made out in the small room behind the rabbi's office. Oren's kiss was so many things at once. It surged through her, of course, making her heady and dizzy and totally lost in the moment. Yet another part of her was outside the body, eyes wide open, watching in amazement and thinking, "Holy shit, I'm being wrecked with a kiss!" How long had the kiss lasted? 5 seconds? 10? 30? A full minute? Not a full minute. She didn't know. Did her own hands wander? She'd replayed the kiss. The kiss. It deserved to be capitalized 100 times, and she still couldn't be sure. She remembered her hands on his strong, round shoulders, how that felt right and safe, and oh, how she loved those shoulders. And what the hell was wrong with her anyway? She remembered how soft the kiss had started, how Oren started to pull away gently, how they came back together, how the kiss grew hungrier, more passionate, how it ended so tenderly. He had kept his hand on the back of her head. He looked her in the eye. "Good night, Hester."
"Good night, Oren."
"Can I ask you out again?" She bit back several snappy rejoinders and went with,
"Yes, I'd really like that."
Oren waited until she was inside the apartment. Hester gave him a smile as she closed the door. Then, alone, she broke into a little happy dance. She couldn't help herself. She felt both flighty and a fool. She got ready for bed in a daze. Sleep, she was sure, would not come. But it had, quickly, the adrenaline rush leaving her spent and exhausted. She slept, in fact, beautifully. Now, this morning, Hester was left with the flutters. Just that, the flutters. Last night now felt surreal, like a dream, and she wasn't sure whether this feeling was something she longed for or something she feared. Did she need this in her life? She was content already, satisfied in both personal life and career. Why risk it? It wasn't just a question of being too old for such immature emotions. She was set in her ways now. She liked being set in her ways. Did she really want something like this upending everything? Did she want to risk hurt or embarrassment or any of the millions of things that could and probably would go wrong? Life was good, wasn't it? She reached for her phone and saw a message from Oren. "Too soon to text? I don't want to look desperate." Swoon. Swoon all over again. She typed back, "Stalker." She saw the three dots signaling he was riding her back. Then, the three dots vanished. She waited. No reply. She felt a brief surge of panic. "I was kidding. No, it's not too soon." No reply. "Oren?" This was exactly what she meant. Who wanted to feel this way? Who wanted their heart in their throat and to be worried that maybe she did the wrong thing or that maybe this was just a game to him and, hey, it was only one date and one kiss? The kiss. So calm the F down already. Her phone rang. She hoped that it was Oren, but the caller ID displayed another number she recognized. She pressed answer and put the phone to her ear.
"Wild?
I need your help." Wild stepped into view by the eco-capsule. He held his phone in the air. Gavin Chambers frowned at him.
"What are you doing?"
"I am on a live video call," Wild said.
"With who?"
"Whom?" a female voice coming from the phone said. "With whom? Prepositional phrase, sweet stuff."
Wild continued to walk toward Gavin. Gavin squinted at the screen.
"Hi, Gavin. My name is Hester Krimstein. We met once at a dinner party at Henry Kissinger's."
Gavin Chambers glanced up at Wild as if to say, "Really?"
"Don't make that face, Bubala," Hester said. "I'm recording all this. Do you understand?"
Gavin closed his eyes and let loose a long sigh.
"For real?"
"No, for fake.
I want you to know that if anything happens to Wild,
nothing is going to happen to him.
Cool, handsome. Then we'll have no issue.
This isn't necessary.
Oh, I'm sure it's not. But when you have a dozen armed men sneak up on my client's home, a home which you subsequently threatened to destroy, label me paranoid. But as his attorney, and just to make it clear for the record, I am your attorney, correct, Wild?
Correct, Wild said.
So, as his attorney, I want this on the record. You, Colonel Chambers, approached my client's home with armed men.
This is public land.
Colonel Chambers, do you really want to spend time arguing detailed legalese with me?
Gavin sighed. No, I do not.
Because I can do that. I'm not in a rush. Are you in a rush, Wild?
I got all day, Wild said. Fine. Sorry, Gavin said. No legalese. Let's move on.
Now, what was I saying? Hester continued. Right. You approached my client's home with armed men. You threatened to break into said home and even destroy it. Don't roll your eyes. Me? I would have you arrested. But my client, against my high-priced advice, is still willing to talk to you. He seems to have what I would consider badly placed trust in you. I will honor his wants while also making our position this clear. If Wild is harmed in any way,
he won't be harmed.
Shush! You listen. If he's harmed or held against his will, if I call him back and cannot reach him or you do anything other than what he requests, I will become a permanent part of your life, Colonel Chambers, like shingles or piles. Only worse. Do I make myself clear?
Crystal.
Wild?
Thanks, Hester. Okay to disconnect?
That's up to you, she said.
Yeah, thanks.
He hit a button and slipped the phone into his pocket. Gavin Chambers frowned.
You called your mommy?
Wow, now you've hurt my feelings.
What I wanted to tell you was supposed to be in complete confidence.
Then call me on the phone next time instead of sending armed men.
Gavin gestured toward the capsule.
I was a little surprised we found your place so easily. I figured you'd set up decoys. You ever read about the Ghost Army in World War II?
Wild had. The 23rd Headquarters, Special Troops.
Whoa, Chambers said. Label me impressed.
The 23rd, a.k.a. the Ghost Army, were an elite force of artists and special effects soldiers who worked tactical deception. They'd use stuff like inflatable tanks and rubber airplanes and even create a soundtrack of war, all to create the 20th century version of a Trojan horse.
How did you find it? Wild asked.
Drone with a sensor, Gavin Chambers said.
He gestured toward the eco-capsule.
Please open the door.
No one is inside.
And opening it will prove that.
Don't trust me?
Exhaustion emanated from him.
Can we just check this box, please?
Who are you looking for?
No one.
You just said that was before you decided to blab to someone with a TV show.
She's my attorney. If I tell her not to tell anyone, she won't.
You can't be that naive.
Gavin Chambers looked off and shook his head. He was weighing a decision, but it was a fait accompli. There was only one way this could go.
It's about Crash Maynard.
What happened to him?
He's missing. A runaway, or Gavin took out his gun? Just open the goddamn door, Wild.
Are you serious?
Do I look in the mood to continue this?
He did not. He looked like a worn garment fraying at the edges.
I told you that Crash is missing. Let me eliminate your hovel so we can find him.
Wild wasn't afraid of the gun. Nor was he tempted to draw his own, but he also saw no reason to antagonize the man any further. He got what was happening here. Crash Maynard had vanished, and Wild was as likely a suspect as anybody. The eco-capsule door opened by the same kind of remote you use to unlock your car door. Wild reached into his pocket, pulled out the remote, and pressed the button with his thumb. Gavin tucked the gun back into the holster as the hatch door rose. He leaned his head in, looked around, pulled his head back out.
Sorry about the gun.
Wild said nothing.
Let's go.
Where?
The Maynards want to see you. In fact, they insist on it.
Gonna pull the gun again if I refuse?
You really gonna hold that over me?
Gavin started down the path.
I said I was sorry.
Neither man spoke during the short ride to Maynard Manor. In the morning sun, the mansion glittered atop a clearing of grass so uniformly green it might have been spray-painted that color. The painstakingly mowed lawn looked to be an almost perfect square, the house being dead center, with what Wilde estimated to be about 300 yards of grass on each side before you reached the woods. There was an Olympic-sized pool on the right, a tennis court on the left, and a regulation soccer pitch with freshly laid-out lime in the back. The SUV came to a stop by an ornate carriage house. Gavin got out of the vehicle. Wilde followed.
Before we go any further, I need you to sign this.
Gavin handed Wilde a piece of paper on a clipboard with a pen attached.
It's a standard NDA. That's a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah, Wilde said, handing it back to him. I know what an NDA is.
If you don't sign, I can't tell you any more about what's going on.
Bye-bye, then.
God, you're a pain in the ass. All right, forget the NDA. Come on.
Gavin started walking toward the woods in the back left corner of the estate.
Did you really think that I kidnapped the boy? Wilde asked.
No.
Or hid him in my capsule? Not really, but it was a possibility.
Gavin kept walking. He stopped in the side yard midway between the house and the woods.
This is where we lose him.
Care to elaborate?
This morning, Crash wasn't in his bedroom. We checked the CCTV footage. Security here is fairly extensive, as you might imagine. CCTV covers the exterior from the home to right about where we are standing.
He took out his mobile phone, swiped across, turned it toward Wilde.
This is Crash, walking past where we are now, probably heading in that direction.
He pointed to the woods behind him and hit the play button. The camera must have had a night filter on it. On the screen, Wilde watched as Crash traveled from the house, across where they now stood, seemingly on his way to the woods. The timestamp in the lower left-hand corner of the video read 2:14 a.m. Anyone else show up on the CCTV before or after him? Wilde asked.
No.
So you figure Crash ran away?
Probably. All we know for certain is that he walked toward those trees.
He turned toward Wilde.
But someone with a strong knowledge of the woods could have been lying in wait.
Ah, Wilde said. That's where I come in.
To a degree.
But you really don't think I had anything to do with it.
Like I said, I was checking the boxes.
So I'm here because I happened to question Crash yesterday.
Hell of a coincidence, that, don't you think?
And Naomi Pine is also missing, Wilde said.
Hell of a coincidence, that, don't you think?
So there is a connection.
Two kids from the same high school class disappear, Gavin said. If there's not a connection,
it's a hell of a coincidence, don't you think? Wilde finished for him. What else you got?
They've been communicating, Naomi and Crash. Yes.
Recently?
I don't know. The kid stays ahead of our monitoring. WhatsApp, Signal, whatever apps they use. They're encrypted. My job isn't to spy on the family, it's to protect them.
Why?
Why what?
Why are you protecting them, Gavin?
And I mean you specifically. You read up on me, I read up on you. You don't do field work anymore, and Dash Maynard is just a television producer. So you're not here simply to protect him and his family.
You're here because of Rusty Eggers.
Gavin smiled. What a deduction. Should I applaud?
Only if you feel it's appropriate.
I don't. It doesn't matter why I'm here. Two teens have disappeared. You want to find one, I want to find the other.
Pool our resources?
We have the same goal.
I assume you brought me out here for a reason.
The Maynards insisted, actually. I figured while you're here, I'd get your take.
Wilde looked toward the woods and spotted a path.
You think that's where Crash was headed? From the angle of the walk on the video, yes, but more than that. That's also the spot where he recently encountered Naomi Pine trespassing.
Crash hadn't encountered Naomi. He'd pranked, intimidated, and bullied her, or at least that was how Matthew described it.
But now was not the time to get into semantics. Wilde started toward the path in the woods to get a better look.
I assume you don't have any CCTV coverage of where we are now, Wilde said.
That's correct. We only worry about people near the estate. We aren't interested in people, especially family members, who voluntarily choose to leave.
So, Wilde said, your working theory is that Crash met Naomi out here, and that they are hiding somewhere together?
Seems most likely.
Yet you still panicked.
We didn't panic.
You had armed men swarm my house.
Stop with the dramatics. These are not ordinary times, Wilde. The family is under enormous stress and pressure. Threats have been made, violent and awful threats. You may have seen something about it on the news.
He nodded.
The Maynards have tapes that could destroy Rusty Eggers. It's not true, but people believe any crackpot conspiracy they see online.
They entered the woods via the path. Wilde checked the dirt for footprints. There were a fair number, mostly fresh. You and your men went through here this morning?
Of course.
Wilde frowned, but in a sense it didn't matter. Crash Maynard had come out here on his own. There was no one else on the tape. Was Naomi or someone waiting for him? Hard to say, via physical evidence. There was a small clearing to the left with the rock where Matthew and Naomi met up. Wilde headed over to it. He knelt down, felt under and around it, and found a few butts, both tobacco and cannabis.
If this place isn't covered by CCTV, how did you know about Crash's encounter with Naomi? One of my men was walking the grounds. He heard a bunch of kids laughing.
And he didn't step in?
He's security, not a babysitter.
A noise familiar to Wilde cut through the air. He looked skyward, through the branches reaching up to the sky of deep, dark blue. The chopping sound from the whirring rotors grew louder. Wilde didn't suffer from PTSD, at least not the kind that could be clinically diagnosed, but there wasn't a guy who served over there that didn't cringe at the sound. He stepped back into the clearing as the helicopter hovered above the side yard. As it descended toward the ground, Wilde sneaked a glance at Gavin Chambers, hoping to get a read on the situation. But if this arrival was known to him, his expression wasn't giving that away. Even from this distance, Wilde could feel the wind from the rotors of the Bell 427 twin-engine copter, maybe the most commonly used for short flights from, say, New York City out to here, as it touched down. The engine turned off. Whoever was inside waited until the rotors stopped spinning completely. Then the pilot came out and opened the door. Heather Krimstein stepped out of the copter. She spotted Wilde and Gavin, smiled, and spread her arms wide.
Can I make an entrance, boys, or what?
Chapter 24 5 minutes later, they were all ensconced in the Maynard's over-the-top library turret. Hester sat across from Dash and Delia. Gavin Chambers stood behind the Maynards. There was an empty burgundy leather wingback chair next to Hester, purportedly for Wilde, but he chose to stand too.
"Can we get you a beverage?" Dash Maynard asked.
Hester looked at Wilde, arching an eyebrow at the word beverage, as if understandably annoyed by the use of the word in casual conversation.
"We're good," Hester said.
"We appreciate you agreeing to join us on such short notice," Dash continued.
"You sent a helicopter and offered to pay double my regular rate," Hester said. "How's a girl to refuse?"
Delia Maynard had yet to speak. There was a slight tremor in her pale face. Her eyes stared out, unfocused. For a few long moments, no one spoke.
"Hey, listen. I can wait all day. Double my usual super expensive though worth it rate. Mama's gonna buy herself a new pair of Louboutins. You know what I'm saying?"
Dash glanced at Delia. Wilde glanced out the window behind them. The view was magnificent. The manor was so high up that you could see the skyscrapers of Manhattan above the tree line.
"I'm joking," Hester said.
"Pardon?"
"Yes, you offered to double my fee, but I don't work that way. I'll bill you the same hourly rate as every other client, no more, no less. And I don't like wasting time, even if I'm on the clock. I don't need money that badly. I'm rich already, not as rich as you, Mr. Maynard. Call me Dash."
"Okay, Dash, cool. Since you seem a little hesitant, let me set a few ground rules to get us off the ground, okay?"
"Yes," he said, clearing his throat. "That might be helpful."
"First thing,
You said on the phone that you wish to engage my services.
Yes.
So now I'm your attorney. Wonderful. Mazel tov. She glanced up over Dash's shoulder to Gavin Chambers. Please leave. This is a private meeting between my client and myself.
No, no, Dash said.
It's okay if Gavin...
It's not okay with me,
Hester interjected.
I'm now officially your attorney. What you divulge to me gets locked away under attorney-client privilege. In short, no one can compel me to reveal what you're about to say. Mr. Chambers here doesn't get that same legal recourse. He can, like it or not, be compelled to reveal the contents of this conversation. So I want him out.
Hester glanced to her right.
You two wild. Skedaddle.
Dash said, but we trust Gavin.
Dash. You told me to call you Dash, right? Dash, this is pretty simple. I'm setting up ground rules like I told you. Rule one, if you want to hire me, you're going to have to listen to me. If you don't want to listen to me, well, my driver is on his way out here. I'll skip that helicopter with that fakakta noise on the way back.
Thank you.
And should be arriving soon. I'll head back into the city and charge you for the visit, and we'll go our separate ways. This isn't a democracy. I'm your dear leader for life. We understand rule one?
Dash looked as though he might argue, but Delia put a hand on his leg.
We understand, Delia said.
Good. Gavin said, I don't like it.
In another lifetime, Hester said, I'll care, really. I'll shed tears, but for now, shush and depart.
Dash nodded to Gavin. Gavin threw up his hands and started for the door. Wilde followed behind him.
Wait, Delia said.
Both men stopped. Delia looked at Hester. We've gotten a full briefing on Wilde's background.
You don't say.
He's still a licensed investigator with Cross Securities, Delia said. You used to employ him to do work for you, correct?
And if I did?
Employ him again, Delia said. For our situation. Then... anything he would hear would fall into attorney-client work product, right?
Hey, nice thinking.
Hester spun and looked back at Wilde.
Want to work for me?
Sure, Wilde said.
Then sit down. Don't stand over me and lurk. It gives me vertigo.
A few moments later, Gavin Chambers was out of the room. The four of them sat in the leather chairs, Delia and Dash on one side of the teak coffee table, Hester and Wilde on the other.
I don't understand. Dash said.
If you could hire Wilde as your investigator, why can't you hire Gavin?
Because,
Hester said.
Because why?
Because I said so.
You flew me out here on a helicopter, because I assume your situation is urgent. Let's get to it, shall we?
Wilde raised his hand. Not yet. Hester turned to him.
What?
Colonel Chambers was trying to monitor your son's communications.
Well, of course he was, Dash said. That was part of his job.
But Hester had already put both hands on the arms of the chair, and with a grunt, she lifted herself to a standing position.
Let's go outside.
What for? Dash asked.
For all we know, your new chief of security put listening devices in this room.
That knocked both Dash and Delia back for a moment.
You don't understand, Dash said. We trust Gavin implicitly.
You don't understand, Hester countered.
I don't. And I'm not so sure your wife does either.
She started for the door.
Come on. Let's get some fresh air. It's nice outside. It'll do us all some good.
Dash once again looked at Delia. She nodded and took his hand. They headed down a spiral staircase, passing a confused Gavin Chambers, and headed outside. Their twins were practicing with a coach on the soccer pitch.
The girls don't know what's going on, Dash said. We'd like to keep it that way.
They walked toward the middle of the yard, nearly taking the same path their son had on that CCTV recording last night. The day was gorgeous, almost mockingly so. Wilde saw Hester spot the view of Manhattan, her home now, and she watched the skyscrapers as though they were old friends. When they were far enough from the house, Hester said,
"So why am I here?"
Dash launched straight into it. This morning, when we woke up, our son Crash was gone. The early signs pointed to him visiting a friend late at night or, at worst, running off. Mr. Wilde here knows the situation, Hester said.
Okay.
Delia cupped a hand over her eyes to block the sun. She looked up at Wilde. Why did you corner our son at the school yesterday?
Whoa, it was Hester. Don't answer that. Let's get me up to speed before we start down any of those roads, okay?
The road is a simple one, Delia said. Because of our current situation, what situation?
Last night, Saul Strauss was a guest on your show, Delia said.
Right, so?
He made accusations involving us.
I assume you're talking about you guys possessing incriminating tapes?
Delia nodded. Purportedly on Rusty Eggers, yes.
I thought he was full of it, Hester said. They exist?
No, Delia said. They do not. No hesitation, Wilde noted. Didn't mean she was telling the truth, of course, but there was zero pause, zero wrong body language, just a straight-up denial.
Go on, Hester said.
When we discovered Crash was missing, Dash said, Colonel Chambers and his team immediately started a search. All early signs pointed to the fact that our son ran away on his own. There is CCTV of him leaving the manor alone, seemingly voluntarily. Dash turned his glare onto Wilde. Still, and I think this is a natural response, Colonel Chambers made sure that the man who yesterday held our son against his will at his school wasn't involved. You know this, of course, Ms. Krimstein. You saw it on FaceTime. We want to know the reason why Mr. Wilde here felt the need to confront our son in his own school. I think our concern is understandable. Hester nodded.
So that's why you had Chambers bring Wilde here?
Yes.
And you figured by hiring me, you'd get him to talk.
Delia spoke up now. No, we hired you because things have changed.
What do you mean?
We don't think Crash ran away on his own anymore.
Why not?
Because, Delia said, we just received a ransom note. The ransom note had come in via anonymous email. Dash handed his phone to Hester, who hunched over so her body would block the sun glare on the screen. Wilde read it over her shoulder. We have your son. If you do not do exactly what we say, he will be executed. We don't want that, but we believe in freedom, and freedom always comes at a price. If you contact the FBI or law enforcement, we will know about it, and we will immediately execute Crash. If you think you can contact the authorities without us knowing, you are wrong. We were able to kidnap your son despite all your expensive security. We will know, and your son will suffer greatly. Our request is simple. We believe that the truth will set you free. For that reason, we want you to turn over the tapes you have on Rusty Eggers to us. All of them, especially the oldest. There will be no negotiating on this. The stakes are too high. Please follow these instructions exactly. On the bottom of this email is a link to an anonymous Dropbox, which works through what is commonly known as the dark web via several VPNs. The link is not active yet. At exactly 4 p.m., click the link and upload all videos that you have on Rusty Eggers per the prompts. You will see a special folder set aside for the truly damaging tape. We know the tape exists, so please do not pretend otherwise. The link will be useless again at exactly 5 p.m. If we don't get what we want, your son will face the consequences. That was it. On the bottom was indeed a hyperlink with lots of jumbled numbers, letters, and symbols of all sorts. Hester read the message several more times. Wilde watched her and waited. Eventually, Hester handed the phone back to Dash. Both of their hands were shaking.
You want my advice?
Hester asked.
Of course. Contact the FBI.
No, Delia said.
You read the message, Dash added. No law enforcement. I get that. But in my view, contacting the professionals gives you your best chance. Only the four of us have seen this email, am I correct?
They both nodded.
So Wilde leaves now. We know people at the FBI, good people, who will keep it quiet. Wilde tells one of these people what's what.
No, Dash said. No way.
Delia,
Hester said.
I agree with my husband. For now, we do this on our own.
They were not going to change their minds. Not yet, anyway. So Wilde shifted gears. According to the timestamp, the email was sent a little more than an hour ago.
What time did you first see it?
Dash made a face.
What does that have to do with anything?
Delia replied, pretty much right away.
That's when you called me? Hester asked.
Yes.
Hester saw where Wilde was going with this.
And may we make an observation? She asked.
Of course.
You didn't tell your chief of security about it.
Dash let loose a sigh. I wanted to.
Yes, but your wife didn't.
Hester faced Delia.
Because you see what I see.
And what do both of you ladies see that I can't? Dash asked with a hint of irritation.
Gavin Chambers works for Rusty Eggers. His loyalty is to him, not you. I didn't send him out of the room just because he could be legally compelled to talk. I wanted him out because you aren't his first priority. Protecting Rusty Eggers is. Do you understand?
I do, Dash said. But even if I agree with that, our interests here are the same.
Hester tilted her head. Are you sure about that? I mean, let's say hypothetically that the choice is your son dies or all your tapes are released to the public. Which side do you think Rusty Eggers is going to take?
Silence.
And I want you to consider something else,
Hester went on.
If this really is a kidnapping, who would be your most likely suspect?
Radicals, Dash said.
Well, that's pretty vague, but let's go with that. Let's say it was radicals. So these radicals figured a way to get your son to go out on his own into the woods and then what? They nabbed him on your own property and dragged him off at, I don't know, gunpoint or whatever?
Hester rubbed her chin.
Does that seem likely?
So what are you saying? Delia asked.
Nothing yet. I'm spitballing. Honestly, that's all. It could be, for example, that your son concocted all of this.
Delia looked skeptical.
I don't think so. Maybe Crash just ran away. Maybe he's fine and safe in hiding. Maybe he sent this email.
Why would he do that?
I don't know. Spitballing, remember? But that's a possibility, right? Another possibility is that Naomi Pine is involved. We know she ran away already. Did she give him the idea? Are they together? We know that Crash and Naomi were classmates, so maybe the two of them are in this together. I don't know, but that's another possibility. Are you with me so far?
Dash frowned, but Delia said, I think so.
So now let's suppose the kidnapping is on the up and up. I don't mean to sound cold and analytical, but for now, let's try to keep emotion out of our thinking, okay? Let's say someone found a way to lure your son out into the woods and grab him. One possibility is that, yes, it's just as it appears. Many, radicals want Rusty Eggers to go down. So a team of experts, CIA or military trained, carried out this operation. Doubtful, but okay, maybe. Which leads me to the one last possibility I can't get out of my head.
Delia said, we're listening.
Gavin Chambers is behind this,
Hester said.
He is the complete insider. He knows the CCTV setup. He knows everything. He told your son to come meet him out in the woods. And he took him.
Dash made a scoffing noise. Ah, that's ridiculous.
Motive?
Delia asked, ignoring her husband's reaction.
Maybe Rusty told him to do it. Maybe Rusty wants to flush out any secrets you might have.
Hester thought that maybe she scored on that one, with Delia, at least.
She took a step closer. Listen, Delia, you felt something, didn't you? That's why you didn't tell Gavin Chambers. Something about him made you hesitate.
I wouldn't go that far, Delia said.
Then?
He works for Rusty Eggers, like you said. I acted out of an abundance of caution, not because I really suspect he'd take our child.
Hester turned to Wilde and caught the look on his face. You have something to add?
A few things odd in the ransom email, Wilde said.
Go on.
First, what do they mean by especially the oldest tape?
I'm not sure, Dash said, but I assume they mean outtakes from season one.
Wilde waited a beat, gave them a pool of silence. People often dove in. Dash and Delia did not. After a few more seconds passed, Hester said,
What else, Wilde?
If the kidnappers just want the truth out there, why not demand that you release the tapes to the media or post them on a public forum? Why would the kidnappers ask you to send them to their private drop first?
I'm not following, Dash said.
It could be nothing, Wild said. Or it could be that the kidnappers want to control the information for themselves, not release it.
The four of them stood there for a few long moments. A lawnmower shattered the silence, then another.
But there's nothing on the tapes, Dash said.
That's the key thing. We don't have any dirt.
Delia nodded. At worst, what we have is slightly embarrassing to Rusty. That's all.
Wild listened to them both and reached a simple conclusion. They were lying.
Chapter 25. They had almost 6 hours until the link was active. Wild knew a few basic rules about negotiating with kidnappers. Rule 1, don't ever agree to the first offer. A life may be at stake, but every negotiation is about power and control. The kidnapper had most of it, but you, the victim's family, are the only buyer in the market for the particular product they are selling. So you have some power, too. Open a dialogue. All the other rules, keep emotion out of it, start low, be patient, demand proof of life, flow from this basic premise. There was only one problem. Wild had no way to reach the kidnappers. There were no emails, no mobile numbers, nothing. Wild tried hitting reply to the ransom email, but the message bounced back. The clock was ticking. So they divided up the chores. Dash would prepare the videos in case they decided to upload some or all of them. Delia would contact Crash's closest friends to see whether any of them saw Crash recently or knew where he might be.
Keep it low-key, Hester suggested to Delia. You're a nervous mom, not sure where your kids spent the night. That's all.
Wild would continue searching for Naomi, because the early theory remained the best one. There was a connection between Naomi's disappearance and Crash's. In short, if you find Naomi Pine, you most likely find Crash Maynard. There was yet another matter Wild had to handle. He spotted Gavin Chambers standing by the tennis court smoking a cigarette.
I'm surprised you smoke, Wild said.
The bad guy always smokes.
Chambers threw the butt on the ground and stomped it with his heel.
And he litters.
He squinted up at the sun.
Your idea to move the meeting outside?
Wild saw no reason to reply.
The library isn't bugged. You can have a guy sweep the place.
Okay.
So you officially throwing me out?
No, Wild said.
Then you want to fill me in on what's going on?
As much as I can.
Hey, Wild. Wild looked up at him. Don't insult me with your bullshit, okay? I know Hester isn't just worried about privilege. I'm viewed as Rusty Eggers' man.
Sure you weren't listening in?
Gavin liked that one. Even Captain Obvious could have figured that one out. Rusty was the one who brought me in, so someone feels that's where my loyalty will be.
Isn't it?
Would it do me any good to say no?
Probably not.
Either way, I just want to find the kid. So what's the plan?
Most of the guards here were employed before you came on board.
Right. I brought in 3 men with me, including Bryce.
Bryce?
The blonde guy you keep tangling with.
Okay. So Bryce and the other two are out,
leaving you with Maynard's untrade rent-a-cops?
I'll bring in a few of my own people, Wild said.
Ah, I see. Gavin Chambers smiled. From your old agency.
He had already called Rolla, who was more than game. She was, in fact, on her way with the crew in hand. Yes.
You guys ever handle a kidnapping? Gavin asked. Because, no offense, you'll screw it up.
Funny.
What?
Before you seemed pretty certain Crash was a runaway, not a kidnapping.
Yeah, that was before the Maynards called Hester Crimstein and tossed me out. And that was before I walked into that library and saw their faces. They were trying to hold it together. That's what Dash and Delia do. But they were clearly coming undone.
Chambers reached into his jacket pocket and pulled out a pair of sunglasses.
By the way, did you tell them?
Wild waited. When Chambers didn't say anything more, Wild said,
Okay, I'll bite. Tell them what? That you met with Saul Strauss at the Sheraton Bar.
Wild shouldn't have been caught off guard, but he was. He was also more than a little upset with himself that he hadn't spotted their tail.
Had his heart-to-heart with Layla really thrown him off that much?
Impressive. Not really.
Question. If your men were following me, then you knew I wasn't at my capsule this morning. You also knew I didn't take the boy.
That a question?
Why the big show of force in the woods if you knew I wasn't there?
We didn't know.
You just said you were following, not you, Wild.
We weren't following you.
Strauss. They were following Strauss.
Saul Strauss is a loon and a threat, Gavin said. You can see that.
I can, Wild said.
So what did he want with you?
Wild considered how to answer this.
I'm not going away, Gavin Chambers said. We can either work together like we said before. I know more about Crash, you know more about Naomi. Or I can just bulldoze my way into representing Rusty's interest without your cooperation.
Wild wasn't certain of the right move here, but the old proverb about keeping your friends close and your enemies closer echoed in his head.
Strauss knew Naomi was missing, Wild said.
How?
I don't know. But he knew there was a connection between Naomi and Crash. Why the hell would Saul Strauss care about Naomi Pine? Chambers asked.
Something else surfaced in Wild's head, one of the first things Saul Strauss had to say to him. I hear you had a run-in with the Maynard kid today. Saul Strauss had known that Wild had been at the school. How had he known that? There were witnesses in the parking lot, of course. But the only other person who might know more than that, the only other person who could really say what had gone on in that art room, was Ava O'Brien. But no, how could Ava be involved in this? She couldn't be. She was just a part-time art teacher. Wild said, you have a relationship with him, right?
Saul Strauss, we served together. I saw him yesterday when he protested by the Maynard's office.
So maybe the first step is to find him, Wild said.
You don't think I thought of that already?
So?
Remember how he walked out of the Sheridan Hotel?
Wild nodded. He walked toward the back exit.
Maybe, Gavin said.
What do you mean?
My men saw Strauss go in. They never saw him go out. We lost him.
The Maynards had given Wild a Lexus GS to use. As he slipped behind the driver's seat, he called Ava O'Brien. The call went into her voicemail. No one he knew ever checked voicemail, so he sent Ava a quick text. Need to talk. ASAP. No immediate reply, no dancing dots. He wasn't sure what he would ask her anyway. If Ava O'Brien was somehow aligned with Saul Strauss, no. That made no sense. Speaking of Strauss, as Wild pulled into Bernard Pine's driveway, he took out the business card Saul Strauss had given him and dialed the number. It went straight to voicemail. It's Wild. You told me to call if I had any information. I do. You'll want to hear it. He didn't know whether that was strictly true, but he figured that that message might get Strauss's attention. Wild thought about Ava. He thought about Strauss. He thought about Gavin and Crash and, yes, of course, Naomi. He was missing something. Bernard Pine, Naomi's father, opened his front door before Wild could ring the bell.
Do you know a man named Saul Strauss? Wild asked.
Who?
Saul Strauss. He's on TV sometimes. Maybe Naomi has mentioned him?
Pine shook his head.
Never heard of him. Have you found anything new?
Have you?
No. I'm going to the police again, but I don't think they'll listen.
Do you know if Naomi's passport is still here?
I could take a look, Pine said.
Come on in. He stepped back and let Wild inside. The foyer smelled stale. Wild spotted the half-full glass and half-full bottle of bourbon on the coffee table. Bernard spotted him spotting it.
Taking a personal day, Bernard said.
Wild saw no reason to reply.
Why do you need her passport?
Any chance Naomi's with her mother? Something skittered across his face.
Why do you ask that?
We called her.
You called Pia?
No reason to clarify that the call was made by Hester's office. Last time we called, your ex-wife straight up told us that Naomi wasn't with her. This time, she wouldn't reply. We also have a report your ex is overseas.
Which is why you asked me about her passport. Pine led Wild to a home office in the back of the house. Standard stuff. Desk, computer, printer, file cabinet. Wild spotted an electric bill and something from the cable company on the right. The checkbook was out. The screensaver was a generic ocean shot, probably one of the computer default screens. The paperweight was a Lucite Block award with Bernard's name on it, some kind of salesman of the month type thing. There was a classic photograph of a golf foursome at a pro-am outing, Bernard beaming on the far right as he held his driver. There were no photographs of his daughter. Bernard Pine rummaged through the drawer, ducking his head for a better look.
Here.
He pulled out the passport. Wild held out his hand. Bernard hesitated and handed Naomi's passport over. There was only one foreign stamp, Heathrow Airport, London, 3 years ago.
Naomi is not with my ex, Pine said. There was no doubt in his tone. Can I show you something?
Wild nodded.